I'm all about the good vibes, the good vibes. We bout to have a good time, a good time. Leave my problems all behind, all behind. We living out the good life, the good life, yeah. I ain't gotta worry about a thing.
Oh no.
Had some obstacles I overcame.
Oh yeah.
You don't have to ever be the same.
Oh lord.
Cause when we change the mind, we change the game.
Podcast. I got my main man in the building. We've been talking for quite some time, for probably over a year now, and I finally got him on the Clutch Vision Podcast. He's a very, very busy man. For those that don't know him, you might have seen him on Good Morning America or any other news station out there dancing. You may even seen him dancing with your baby online on his Instagram, on his Triller, or maybe even on Facebook. I got my man, Tony Atkins, physician assistant, also known as the Dancing Doc. What's going on, big boy?
Man, it is all good in the hood over here, boy.
That's what's up, man. That's what's up, man. How's the family doing over there during the quarantine, brother?
You know, they doing their thing. You know, my wife is, you know, she's about to hang in the school programming towel because she's getting kind of wore out with my third grader.
Yeah. She's like, yo, it's a wrap. I can't take no more.
Exactly.
You probably gonna have to hire a nanny or something like that, right?
Man, shoot, yeah, I think it's almost close, about this close.
Oh man. How are the kids hanging in? Like, they want to get out?
Yeah, my oldest, you know, she's very resilient. You know, she just got on the honor society, and she's trying to do cheer. So she, you know, I know she doesn't like it here, but, you know, but she doesn't really show it. But my youngest, you know, she can watch, you know, the YouTube all day long and she'd be all right. So, we try to get out just to every now and then, just kind of go somewhere where nobody is at and just kind of hang out and just kind of enjoy, you know, the things that God has made outside for a little bit.
Facts. So how many kids do you have?
I got two girls.
Two girls.
One 16.
Say 116, and how's the other one?
8 years old.
8, 16, and 8. Oh, that's pretty good distance.
Oh yeah.
Yeah, that's cool, what's up.
Man, I'm cool.
Yeah, man. I mean, I got four brothers, so you know, I know.
I envy you.
I bet you do. I got 16, 11, 6, and 3.
Whew, man.
Yeah, man. I think it's gonna be four and no more. I don't know.
Man,
see what God told me. People been asking me the last couple of weeks, you guys gonna have any more kids? Somebody asked me on Instagram, y'all gonna have some more kids? And I'm like, huh, that's kind of personal. Like,
hey.
What you mean? Like, you know, I ain't have no kids in this pandemic, I'll tell you that much. I ain't doing that. So for those that don't know, so how did you get the name The Dancing Doc?
Yeah, so it kind of all started. At first, it was like on the local Channel 4 news. It was the first one was Bedside Boogie. Mm-hmm. And then when I went to New York in September of 2018 to be on Good Morning America, I was telling the producers, you know, just make sure you don't say doc. You know, just, that's all you need to do. Just make sure you don't say doc. Because, you know, physician assistant, we just call Mr. or Mrs. When Michael Strahan got on, and then he just kept on saying, Doc, hey, Doc. And then, you know, we got Tony Atkins, the Dancing Doc. I was like, oh, man.
Yeah.
It's, you know, it just kind of rung really well with media. So they just kind of ran with it. And then I just been on so many different shows, you know, Dr. Oz show, Canadian news show, two different Australian news shows, and they always use Dancing Doc.
Yeah, it's kind of catchy, man. I get it, man. I mean, they call me the Dancing Dad, so it kind of just stuck. I mean, I was like, I get a phone call one day after our video blew up with Sierra, and then like, you're the Dancing Dad, right? I'm like, who? The what?
Like, I gotta pay. Like,
I guess, like,
hey.
It kind of just stuck. So I was like, you know what? I guess I'll go ahead and copyright the thing. Why not?
Right, exactly. You know what I'm saying? Exactly.
So you started dancing with your patients, right? Mm-hmm. How long ago did that start? Is that something that you've been doing, or did you just start it out the blue?
I would do it every now and then when I was in the OR, when I'm just like kind of goofing around, because it's like really tense when you first get into a case. And then once we're like starting to close up and kind of, getting everything wrapped up, and I start, kind of joking around, singing to the music, and then start kind of moving around, dancing. And then, because I always loved music, when I was a little kid, my whole passion was music. I didn't really care about TV. I just played my G.I. Joes and listened to music as I'm playing my G.I. Joes. I grew up in the South Central Los Angeles, so it's a pretty rough area of L.A. And I didn't go outside because I had two older brothers that were involved in the gangs in the area. So I just used music and dance and looking at VH1, MTV at the time, then BET, and just kind of emulate all of the music and the performers on there. So that just kind of took me away from my environment at that time. Mm. So one day I saw one of my kids that had childhood leukemia. He beat that. Then he had a lot of different neurological things that caused neurosurgery to get involved. And I saw how depressed he was starting to get. So I said, next day I see him, I'm going to turn on some music and just kind of start, doing my thing and dancing and see what I can do. So that's what I did. I turned on some music. It was Can't Touch This by MC Hammer. And yeah. I started dancing. He started dancing. His mom filmed it. She put it on social media, and then it just went from there.
Wow. So now you are up to over 2.3 million followers on Facebook and hundreds of thousands on Instagram and Triller, and you are inspiring people all over the world. So now I didn't even see some of your colleagues getting down with you sometimes in some of these videos, man. What's up with that?
Man, when I first started getting really popular, I started doing it in random locations. Started going to the radiology department, started doing it there. I went into the ICU, did something there, and you have the pediatric ICU, then you have the neonatal ICU. So I did something in two different places, and I just kept doing it in different areas. And it just, in the hospital, we have a lot of things that we see that are very negative. You've been in the hospital for a period of time, so you kind of know.
Yep.
You were worried about your son.
Yeah.
For us, we're worried about a group of patients that we see. So in neurosurgery, I see a bunch of people. I may have, it's four different floors. I'll have three or four on each floor, and I have to worry about. So we see so many bad things that happen to kids and good families that, we have to do stuff that kind of breaks up all of that ice. And so I did all these dances and kind of liven up people's spirits by doing this. And it just kind of, helped us. It just rejuvenated us, as just being able to continue to move forward on our rough days that we've had, because we grow really attached to our families. And if, we have a bad outcome with one of the kids, then we feel it too. A part of us, fall down with that family. And it wears on you like all the time. And, there's a lot of things out there for families grieving for their loved ones, but there's not a lot of things out there for healthcare providers that see the things that happen to other people's loved ones, because you guys become family to us,
right?
And lose a family member, we all grieve, but there's a lot of things in place for families that have lost a loved one, but it's not a lot for us,
right? Wow. So this thing has just turned into a worldwide phenomenon pretty much. And you just got, I just see kids of all different ages and all different cultures just coming in and enjoying themselves, man. And I think that is dope and important to instill that type of mindset and positive mentality, with the kids, especially because getting surgery and being in the hospital is not really fun at all. You know what I'm saying? And for us, we were in and out of the hospital for 149 days. And like, it was not like the spot to be, you know what I'm saying? So I know exactly what you're talking about, because I danced for Christian every single day. It was just like, you know what? For me personally, mm-hmm. I was like, my mental, I got to go ahead and rock out and still train, right? For my son, it was make him happy, because I really wasn't banging with the ukuleles that they was trying to bring in or whatever. Like, I'm going to keep it real, man. You got to talk to your squad, B. We got to do something different. You know what I'm saying? With the musical therapy that be coming up in here. Talk to your squad, man. Cause you know what I mean? This ain't the 70s, bro.
Oh, no. Exactly. That's exactly the reason why I do the things I do. Cause you know, not all of us get entertained by the same stuff that's been in place forever.
Forever, right, man. And I'm just like, I was just like, yo, babe, like, we can't, this can't keep happening. Like, I'm not beat. Like, it was the most boring thing ever. I'm like, listen, my son's fighting cancer. He ain't dead. Like, come on, yeah.
Right.
It's a difference, you know what I'm saying? So how long have you been doing the dancing for the kids?
Yeah, so I pretty much started back in 2018. Okay. And then after it kind of went off, it started to get a lot of traction once one of our ICU docs passed away. Mm-hmm. And I posted one of my dances to one of the community Facebook pages. Mm-hmm. And one of the CEOs of the hospital saw it, and this is right after he passed away, and she reached out to my practice and through the marketing department, was like, you know, he is doing amazing work. I was down because of our physician just passed away, but I see what he's doing here. He's lifting us all up. So let's team up with him and try to make this part of our hospital. And that's what happened. So my hospital just kind of welcomed me in and was like, we already have documentation for you to have the staff as well as family, as for the patient to sign as a consent form to allow you to do it. So
still,
you know, in the beginning, there was a lot of pushback from people on social media, because it's like, you shouldn't be doing this with your patients. You know, there is a relationship that should be in hand. It should be a provider and a patient, and you shouldn't be getting that close to each other. But I was like, you know what, you know, I'm a dad. You know, I was a kid. I'm still a kid at heart. Yeah. I know what I want as a patient. And I know what I want from my kids if they were a patient. I was like, I'm going to do whatever it takes to make sure they enjoy themselves and laugh and have fun.
Yeah.
You know, there's magic tricks. They're cool. You know, having a clown come over is cool, but you have a black dude coming in and be like, you know, what up? We about to have a good time.
Right, we about to get busy, you know what I'm saying?
Damn.
Yeah, yo, where the games at? Where the games at, you know? That's what I'm saying. Yeah, that's dope, man. That's dope, yo. I love it. Now it's implemented into the hospital. Mm-hmm. So people, they can just sign off if they want to be down. If they don't want to be down, their name is cool. And that's what's up, man. Like, and I love it, man. And it's not like, it doesn't have to be so serious all the time. Like, and that's what I'm saying. Like, people have to understand, like, I heard that 70% of illnesses start within the mind, mm-hmm. you know, and if they start in the mind, then that means they could probably end with the mind. So with you dancing mentally, you're even healing them even more just generally be happy and have a happy lifestyle so that they don't continuously get sick. I mean, yes, you guys love your patients and everything, but the last thing you want is for them to still end up in there.
Yeah, of course.
You know? So yeah, man, I commend you on that, brother. So what are some things, so is this like a routine thing that you guys do like every day, or how does it work?
So, you know, I have a list of patients that I see in the hospital, you know, all the way up, you know, the top floor is the ICU, and then there's neurosurgery floor, and the you know, then I have the oncology floor and I have medical floors underneath that. And so, you know, when I see my patients, you know, I'm always just like joking with them and kind of, you know, getting in their face and just trying to make them laugh and things like that. And then we really connect at that point. And then some patients, you know, I have families that know that I work there. So they'll message me on Instagram and Facebook and be like, you know, can you come by our room? You know, I really want you to meet my son or daughter. And then I go over there, we kind of hang out. And then the parents be like, oh, why don't you dance with them? So then, and then it kind of starts from there. Other times I'm in something called spina bifida clinic, and I see these kids twice a month. And when I go in to see them, it's a multidisciplinary clinic where there's a bunch of different providers, orthopedics, social work, pediatrics. So all these providers there, and we're seeing all these patients in different rooms. And when I go into a different room and I see somebody I've been following since I've been there. And they're like, oh, Tony, can we dance today? And I'm like, yeah, sure. I'm always down for that. So
that's what's up.
And that's how it goes down. It's not, you know, it's something that I don't force on nobody. It's just, you know, if they want to get down, I'm always willing, you know, and then we sometimes they have a song. Sometimes I got the song. And then, you know, it just kind of goes from there. It's like, it's all organic. You know, we just keep it going.
That's dope, man. That's dope. Now, you say you grew up in South Central LA, right?
Yeah, yeah.
So tell us, how was it growing up in South Central LA? Like, take us through the process of you growing up in a, you know, pretty dangerous area, I would think. And then,
right,
you know, you becoming, you know, a physician assistant.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so, you know, when I was young, my mom and my dad divorced when I was around four. So my mom and my two older brothers, we moved to South Central Los Angeles. And my older brothers were going to the local high school or elementary and then high school. And my two older brothers, they got involved in gangs. And it's the, it's called the same gang as Nipsey Hussle was from.
So the Rolling 60s.
Yeah, yeah. Okay. So they got involved in gangs, and my oldest brother, he would go in and out of jail. And my middle brother, he was doing a lot of other things, you know, illegal activities. So I just, you know, I looked at them as, you know, I always get the question when I first started out, it was like, you know, a lot of people were asking me, who was your role model? And, you know, they always think, you know, everybody had a role model as they were growing up. And it's like, you know, it's not, and they think that's positive. You know, was it Michael Jackson? Was it somebody else? Like, you know, I didn't really have a role model. My role models were not their role models that they have in their mindset. My role models were my brothers of what not to do as I got older. And I was like, you know, I'm not going to do that. You know, it's like, you know, I used to joke with my friends. I was like, man, you be in the gang, it's like you guarantee to get beat up, you know, you guarantee to be incarcerated or shot at. So I was like, that's what was our running joke. So, because I didn't want to be in it. And I had one of my other friends, he didn't want to be in it. And so, you know, I was seeing a lot of some of my friends and my brother's friends, you know, not making past teenage years. And a lot of people on my block were going in and out of jail. And then you would hear all about the police brutality and a lot of different things with that. So, you know, you always grew up knowing that police were not your friend. But then you have some police officers that were cool, that would come around, give you like LA Raider baseball, you know, cards or the Dodger cards. So they'll give us like cards to just try to, you know, kind of connect with the community. And I just kind of looked at that as, you know, this is my direction is not where I see it going,
right,
based off of my environment. I took what was I was with and had, and I said, you know, I'm not gonna end up here. Mm. I need to not be struggling like my mom is struggling. You know, some days we come home, the lights be off because she didn't have enough money to pay the bill to keep the lights on. You know, it was rough. You know, so I decided that, you know, I'm gonna be the best dad because my dad wasn't around, and I'm going to make sure I make a way for the kids, future kids that I want, as well as the wife that I want to, a type of wife that I want to have. Mm-hmm. And that was my promise to myself. And from that day on, you know, when I went to high school, I didn't know what I was going to do when I got out of high school, because I was like lost. Mm-hmm. You know, I was in the high school that was, you know, part of the desegregation process back in the 60s. So I got bused from the inner city of LA all the way to Malibu. Mm-hmm. And I would go to school with all these affluent white kids and Asian kids. And I, you know, I felt out of place. And they made me feel out of place because I was placed into remedial classes. So I was in classes. So, you know, it's four levels in California. I'm not sure how it is everywhere. So it's like special education, remedial, regular classes, and then honor classes. Mm-hmm. And then something else higher up there where you go to college classes. Right. I was in remedial classes. So that's a level above special ed classes. Mm-hmm. So I would just, you know, just in the class just to make sure I'm there and do a little bit of work and I get a good grade. And then, so when I graduated from high school, I didn't know what I was going to do because I didn't know about, you know, applying to college the year before or the college deadlines because I didn't have no college counselors. So I, as soon as I got out of school, I just, you know, my mom was like, why don't you join the military? So I joined the military and I was in the military for 9 years and
really?
Military just like gave me the drive that I can do whatever I want to do, just stay with it. And that's what I did, you know, and kept on going, just grinding, man. It's like every night, you know, once I got into school, I didn't know how to study because, you know, high school was a bust. So right. I had to do everything literally all the way over. So I did the amount of college that I did the same amount of first grade to 12th grade. So I did 12 years of college to get to where I was at. And typically it only take you like 4 to 6 years. And I did everything all over again because I didn't have anything to transfer. So I had to go to community college for 6 years versus going there for 2 years. I was determined and I wasn't going to turn around. I was committed. As soon as I came back, this was what I want to do. I was, my first destiny was trying to get a medical school, but I got older. So I was like, you know, I'm just going to go for something else, something more low lying fruit. So I was like, I'm going to go to PA school. It was only 2 years. And then I transferred to, a 4-year university, Texas Tech. That was in September, 2000. And then, September 11th happened, the next year when I transferred back and I got deployed for 2 years. And then I came back and then I graduated from, a 4-year university, UC Riverside. And then I did a bunch of other different things. So it took a long time and I didn't give up. You know, I've had a lot of negative things saying you should stop, but I said, no, I can't.
Wow. Wow, man. I gotta get one of them bombs, brother. Like you just sat there and just laid out the joints, man. That's what's up, yo. So you were in the military for 9 years, mm-hmm. and you went to school for another 12.
Yeah. So while I was still in the military, wait, so I was active. Uh huh.
So wait. So how old are you now?
I'm 43.
43.
Yeah, man.
Hey, stop playing.
It's Long Island iced teas.
Dude, my man 43 on. I thought we was like the same age or something like that, brother. You know what I'm saying? Because I'm 36.
So I'm
somewhere around there. That's what's up, yeah. Man. So 9 years. So when did you go? You went to the military in obviously in your 20s.
Yeah, so I got in when it was like it was 1994 after I graduated from high school.
Mm. Wow. And then did nine years and then did another 12.
Yeah.
Wow, that's crazy, man. That's dope, man. That's a level of determination. Where do you feel like your determination came from? Like, if you had to pinpoint.
It was, you know, looking at my mom, how much she had to struggle for everything, you know. And, you know, she didn't want to, she's one of the women that don't want to, you know, ask for help. So she... As a lot of it was about pride, even though she was struggling a lot, she didn't want to ask people to assist her in things. So I looked at that as like, you know, somebody that's strong and want to continue to push forward for her children as well as herself, and not give up and not go running back to somebody else to help her. And that was, you know, that was my backing. And then when I got in the military was like, you know, you're intelligent, you're honorable. You just keep on pushing and you'll get where you need to go. And I used that as like, you know, that was my backbone as my mom, but then the military just took it the rest of the way.
Wow, man. Wow. So do you instill some of those disciplines into your kids now?
The 8-year-old, she's not really ready yet, but the 16-year-old, you know, I really try to instill her, you know, you have to, you know, continue to push forward. You know, you can't look at things as things that should be given to you. You got to go in there and reach it and grab it and run with it.
Mm, yeah. Amazing, man. Amazing. So like, so now you know, what do you say to those kids that, you know, are in that situation right now that are living in South Central LA? What do you say to them to encourage them to move forward?
Yeah, you know, just kind of continue to push ahead. You know, there's so many things against us, you know. Right. You know, being the color that we are, you know, we've since desegregation and Jim Crow laws, you know, it's only been, what, 40, 50 years?
Yeah.
And we've been suppressed for 400 years. Yeah. So this is all pretty new to the United States and the world, you know? So you have to find a way for yourself and keep pushing. You know, there's gonna be a lot of walls, and walls are made to be climbed over. There are gonna be windows. You're gonna be break them and walk into them. You have to continue to push forward. You know, if you give up, and that's what people want you to do, is give up and succumb to your environment by selling drugs, by going into gangs and going into incarceration. And then you start funding things that are incarceration, making license plates, making different things for the general public on the outside. Yeah. You know, that's going to be your debt to society forever. You know, you don't want to be that. You want to create your own stuff and continue to build your culture and build people up around you. You know, it's hard. You have to put on blinders and keep going. Not everybody's going to help you.
Yeah.
You know, nobody can walk the walk with you.
Exactly.
Or walk for you. They can walk with you, but they can't walk for you. You got to do it yourself.
Wow, man. So you went from being in the hood to being the dancing doc. Come on, y'all. Y'all can do it. You know what I'm saying?
And lay it down.
You know what I mean? So now, like, so how are the hospitals, you know, where you're in your area right now? Like, how's everything handling, you know, during the pandemic and COVID-19?
So, you know, there's a lot of, you know, in children's hospitals all across the United States, they're still able to have one visitor, which is the parent or a guardian, or if the parent wants to switch out with a family, with a relative. But in adult hospitals, there's no visitors, not one. So if you go in there, you go in there alone, and some people die alone. And the only way you can see your family member is if you FaceTime on a phone or a tablet. So, and that's a terrible way to be, you know,
I mean, I'm not sure if you can answer or whatever, but do you agree with that, or are there other ways that we can still take precautions so that people don't necessarily die alone in the hospital?
So that's a tough question, because there's no good answer that people want to hear. Because for myself, and I'm taking care of people in the adult world, in the pediatric world, there's no way to get around of not having a visitor for a 4-year-old that's in the hospital. There's no way. There's no civilization that would say there should be no visitors for this 4-year-old. But at the same time, when you're talking about adult world and you have to think of everybody within the hospital that are constantly in the hospital. And then you have folks that come from home and we don't know where they're coming from.
Yeah.
So, yeah. They can bring anything and everything with them. Mm-hmm. So, and there's no way to say, okay, let's test everybody. We already have a problem with the testing.
Right.
So we can't test people that are in the general public unless they have really pronounced symptoms. Mm-hmm. And that's a shortcoming of our system. Mm-hmm. If we had the ability to test everybody, then you'll test everybody. But then you have to test people over and over again. It's like when we're going to start back sports, you're going to have to test people not once. You probably have to test them at least 3 or 4 times a week, especially right. if they go outside and right. then they come back in. You got to test them and then have them wait until you get the results. So right. if I test a family member trying to come into the hospital, they're going to have to wait in a pocket somewhere until I get the results saying that they're negative. And then we say, okay, come in.
Right. But the results don't come back right away, do they?
No, not at all. But there is an antibody test that will say, okay, you have an antibody for it, or no, you don't have an antibody for it. Or, some of the tests have false positives or false negatives. So, 70% of the chance or 70% of the time, it's saying that you're negative, you don't have it. But then what about the 30% that it missed? So you can actually be positive when it says you're negative. So, the last thing you want to do is infect the people that are trying to treat the people.
Right.
Because it's the worst thing ever.
Right, right. Have you ever seen anything like this before? Like any, type of virus or whatever because it seems like, I mean, I don't really watch the news too much. I kind of try to stay away from a lot of that stuff. Yeah. And I don't really try to, I'm gaining, education on this particular situation, but I don't know what's real, what's mm-hmm. fake. Right. You know what I'm saying? Like, because there's so many different misconceptions going on, people with their conspiracy theories or whatever mm-hmm. the case may be. I don't know. You know what I'm saying? So for someone like me, mm-hmm. What advice can you give a person like me that's like, that sees that there's something out there, whatever, clearly, but what kind of information, can you give for someone just in the general public about this particular virus?
That it is transmitted by, droplets, as well as people, they sneeze, cough, and some people don't know how to sneeze and cough the proper way. And then they open up the doors, they touch different countertops. So these things can lay on this area. And then we brush our hands against it. And then
we're talking about like the bacteria of sneeze out or mm-hmm. cough.
Yeah. And so those droplets can last in the air for a little bit. And then you don't have a mask on, you run right into it and then you get it that way.
How long can the droplets last in the air?
So it was like 4 to 6 hours,
really?
Was in one study. So they're still doing a lot of studies on how long things, as well as when you doing a 6 feet distance. Then when you work out,
So my question is, cause I'm just trying to like gain knowledge or whatever on it. So if the distance is 6 feet, mm-hmm. but a person sneezes.
Yeah.
So right?
that's the reason why we say 6 feet, because you're that projectile, when you sneeze, you're not sneezing up like this and sneezing like that. You're sneezing straight ahead. So then the droplets kind of go down within 6 feet.
So the droplets go down, but you're 6 feet apart. But if you're walking in that area, but it doesn't
still... can walk right into it. Yeah.
So even if they go down like and hit the floor, you can still walk into it? Or
if it hits the floor, you're just walking on top of it. But that's right. why we say wear the mask so you don't inhale it. But there's always a way that you can get it into your eyes. So your eyes have the mucous membranes too.
Kind of like pollen or something like that. Like if you're breathing pollen in, for someone like myself mm-hmm. that's allergic to it, if it gets in my eyes, then my eyes, boom, it's a wrap or whatever, like just like that, right?
Right. So, and that's the reason why when we're in the ER, we wear those face shields. So right. People sneeze, it only hits the shield, it won't hit in our eyes. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, there's a lot of different things that are going on with this virus, and we're still doing a lot of studies on it with kids as well as with adults, as well as the people that have already had the virus and beat it. And then we're trying to figure out what type of antibodies they have and kind of try to inject it in folks that have the virus that are in the ICUs on ventilators and see what that does. So there's a lot of studies that are going around with that.
So this particular virus, did it come from, you know, an animal? Like I'm hearing like it came from a bat, the mm-hmm. bacteria, whatever, from bats or whatever. And then it got into this, and then bang, 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 next thing you know, we got the whole outbreak movie happening all over again.
Right. So there is, there goes my daughter.
Hey.
I'm in a meeting, okay? Thank you. All right.
I feel you, dog.
That only happens on TV.
And you know, Christian probably is still up right now. I think I just heard him too. All right. But yeah,
what was your question again?
So I was saying, like, does this come from, you know, did it come from an animal or a bat?
Yeah.
Okay.
So the thought is that it was in a bat, and then it went to this little animal, another different animal that has these scales on them, that the bat poop probably dropped around this animal, and then the humans in that Providence in China eat this type of animal, and that's how they contracted it. So at first it was only from animal to human, and then it mutated, and then it went from human to human. And that's how it spreads when viruses or new viruses, called novel viruses, kind of spread, is where it comes from. Because sometimes, you know, we get a flu and we have animals, and the animal can get the flu, or the animal has the flu and then we get the flu from the animal. And so those are kind of things that happened with this, is where there's a new virus that was already endemic, so is already in the population of that animal, and then it jumped from the animal to humans, and then from humans to humans.
Wow, that's crazy, man. Well, I'm staying my black self in the house. Good. This joint wild, man. This joint wild. Like I think the main thing for me that I'm most concerned about is a person's mental health on it. Yeah. You know what I'm saying? Like, because a lot of people don't understand, you know, where you guys are learning, just like we're learning as well. Yeah. So it's kind of like an unknown enemy that we're fighting here. And, yeah. You know, I'm a spiritual person. I believe in God, and I believe that there is, you know, sometimes it's good to stay in your cave for a couple months, you know, because God is working some things out. Yeah, and that's what I'm going to stick with, because I feel that at this point right now, you know, people got to start fighting with their faith a little bit more to get through this thing, and know that we're going to get through it, know that we're going to get to that next level, and that the curve is going to flatten out, and we're going to beat this thing at the end of the day. I don't know anything about any political agenda or nothing like that, because I don't really pay attention to politics too much. Mm-hmm. But what I do know is I pay attention to the people. And that, to me, is my main concern, is paying attention to the people and making sure that they are mentally equipped for, you know, everything that's happening right now. Yeah. And, you know, if there's any encouragement that you can give to the people, what would that encouragement be? If you had all 7.5 billion of us listening to you right now, during this virus, what encouraging words would you say to us, from a professional standpoint as well too?
Right. So, you know, I would just, you know, stress that, you know, there are guidelines of, you know, when things should take place, and how things should take place. There's a lot of people within our population that just don't understand it. You know, they feel that, you know, the virus is a hoax. They feel that the virus is something that was made up and it's not really a virus. They think it's 5G. So I think it's a whole bunch of different things that are going out there. But, you know, if we can, you know, at least just go into the ICU, you know, take everybody on a field trip to your local ICU and see what's actually going on. Yeah. And they will know, you know, there's not a, you know, there are people, there's a lot of people that get through it. But then there's a lot of people that just can't fight it good enough. And they have all type of different things. So it's ranging from the really young all the way to the old. So it's not really picking out an age. At first it was like, it's only this age. And then it was like, it's only this race. But it's pretty much everybody, you know, and we go back too soon. All it is just going to reintroduce it and it's going to explode more. So, you know, in the hospital, we are trying our hardest to, you know, stay positive with the change in environment of, you know, pushing people back into the population because they need to get back and they want to get their hair cut. They want to go to the park. They want to go.
I got my hair cut today, boy. Yeah, but now I hear you.
Yeah, my wife tidies me up. She's a hairstylist too. So this is done. But, you know, people want to get back to, you know, their daily routine and they feel that their civil liberties have been stripped away from them. And, you know, it's African-Americans have been oppressed forever, and, you know, and it's never going to change. You know, we have been through it all, and we still have a section of the population that know what it's like to have been through it all. But there's a lot of people in America that feel that, you know, because they're in quarantine, that their freedoms are being taken away. Is that our freedom has never been given to us.
Yeah, right.
It's just a little token that says you are free, but anytime they want to take it away, they can take it away. So it's hard to, you know, tell people that, because they can't see it. They don't have a family member that's died. They don't have a family member that's in the ICU, so yeah. They don't know.
I personally lost a family member to it, so.
Right. You understand, you know, but until everybody sees it, it's out of sight, out of mind. It's like, oh, look at the numbers are going down and it's not over here. And it's like, man, but you only give it just a few minutes. Let somebody come from, if Orange County, so I'll take my area, for example, LA is shut down, but Orange County is open. So then somebody from LA was like, you know, we're going to go to Orange County. We can go to the beach out there. So let's go out there. So somebody in LA can have it. They come on down to Orange County, give it to everybody at the beach. And now you got more numbers in Orange County. So, and that's some places in Texas is having those problems, you know. So it's only a matter of moments of what's it going to do within the next few months and what's it going to do when it comes back.
So what are some things that people can do to boost their immune system as well?
Yeah, so it's a lot of diet, exercise, you know, trying to take, you know, multivitamins, getting our daily nutrition, you know, things that will boost your immune system, vitamin C, zinc, you know, these type of things that you should normally take on a regular, you know, and, you know, you go to a lot of the vitamin shops, a lot of these immune booster things are all sold out because a lot of people are just flooding the market. Just like somebody, I don't know where, said, you know, we need to buy toilet paper. So everybody's like, I'll buy toilet paper. I'm like, man, I know how to use, I can use a leaf if I have to. So,
right.
But it's, you know, just all about, you know, taking care of your health, you know, trying not to eat all this junk food because that's what kills us in the end. So, you know, we have to make sure we take care of ourselves and put our bodies first before we say, you know, this is it.
Yeah. Awesome, brother. Awesome, man. Listen, guys, if you guys are listening to this on YouTube, make sure you guys go ahead and click that like button and then click that subscribe button as well too. Click the bell after that and make sure you share this with your mama, your daddy, your auntie, your uncle, your grandma, your grandpa, your step sister, your stepdaughter, your step auntie, your step uncle. I don't care who it is, your cat, your dog, your local physician. How about that? Share with him or her. You know what I'm saying? Share with your nurse practitioner. I don't care who it is. Just make sure you go ahead and share it with somebody now. Now, Tony, I got one more thing to do with you before we get out of here, okay? I want to play a game with you.
All right. Let's do this.
And it's called In the Clutch. I'm Kenny Clutch, and the game is called In the Clutch. All right, you ready?
Yep.
So here's how it goes. So the reason why it's called In the Clutch is because In the Clutch stands for Inspirational Dancers Creatively Linking Upon the Culture of Hip-Hop. All
right.
All right? So I'm going to give you a word, okay? Uh-huh. And then you give me a positive – I'm sorry, I'm going to give you a letter, and then you give me a positive word after that. Cool?
Got it.
All right, here we go. C.
Oh, my gosh. Calm.
L.
Loyalty.
U.
Unite.
T.
Together.
C again.
That's a good one. collective.
There's, yeah. H.
Honesty.
That's clutch, baby. Everybody give it up for my man, Tony Atkins, the PA, the dancing doc, has came through in the building, man. So listen, brother, it wouldn't be right if we didn't just, you know, get down in our seats real quick. You know what I'm saying? If you down for that, you know what I mean? We can shuck and jive for a second. I'm gonna put on a little track for the people real quick. Yeah, I mean, see what we got going on. You got like a favorite artist or anybody?
And anybody's my favorite.
Matter. All right, cool. Let me see who we got. You know, we're gonna go with some Pitbull real quick. Let's see what he got up in here. Hopefully I don't wake my kids up. Sorry, right. Guys, for the ad that's on YouTube right now. I'm gonna just go ahead and edit that real fast though, but it's all good. Well, let's see. You can hear the music?
Yeah, I got it.
Let me see where you at real quick, boy.
Wait.
Brother, word up man, appreciate you, man.
Thank you so much, appreciate you as well, man. You're doing a really good thing for the community.
Thank you, man. Where can the people find you at, brother?
So on Instagram is T_Malone, M-A-L-O-N-E, the number 3, as well as on TikTok, same username, T_Malone3. On Facebook, Tony Atkins, A-D like David, K-I-N-S.
Word up, brother. We appreciate you coming on to the Clutch Vision Podcast. I got to have you back on. Thank you for dropping all the knowledge during the pandemic. You know, you being a great father, a great leader, and a great example that you can make it out of any situation, no matter where you at. If you in the hood, listen, y'all can go ahead and y'all can make it out and become a doctor and start helping people and start changing lives and start changing the world. Don't be afraid to be yourself, as my man Tony is doing. He ain't letting nobody hold him back. So once again, it's your boy Kenny Clutch on the Clutch Vision Podcast. Make sure you guys share this everywhere. If you're on Spotify, if you're on Anchor, if you're on Apple Podcasts or Google Podcasts, make sure you guys go ahead and share, subscribe, and just give it out to the world, sharing this love and positivity. And like we say all the time, when we change the mind, we change the game. It's your boy Kenny Clutch, the Clutch Vision Podcast. Peace.